Then, she made her way to the bottom floor, where she collapsed. Angie leaves for some reason. She comes back for some reason. She drags Joe to her Monte Carlo, blows up Dale's Kia, then drives off again, she added, and leaves her own daughter marinating in her trunk for 6 hours? Will stifled his impulse to say that Angie wouldn't do something like that. Amanda said, I'm getting a lot of pushback on that warrant for Figueroa's telephone. We got the street surveillance approved, but just barely. No one has left a Figueroa house except Laszlo. He was sent to McDonald's for breakfast. He bought 3 cups of coffee and 3 breakfast platters. 3, not 4, which means that they didn't get anything for Anthony, Faith said. Let me get my notes. I need to talk this out again. Will didn't want to listen to another recap. He looked past Faith's shoulder, pretending that he wasn't listening. He watched the nurse typing something onto a tablet computer. All of the patient files at Grady were digitized. The whiteboard behind the nurse's station was still low-tech. They hand-wrote patient names and updated their status so that they could keep track of the ward. As Will watched, the nurse went to the board and erased Jane Doe 1. She wrote in a new name with a red marker. All caps, which was easier for him to read. And it helped that he had seen the name several times before. He said, Delilah Palmer. Amanda asked, What about her? He pointed to the board. The nurse had overheard him. She explained,
Domestic abuse. They can't find the boyfriend. She walked into the ER with a knife sticking out of her chest.
When? Faith asked.
Early Monday, right before my shift.
Will said, I thought we checked the hospitals for stabbing victims.
We didn't.
Faith sounded furious. She told the nurse,
Olivia, the patient's been Jane Doe 1 since I was here last night. What changed?
The orderly checked her clothes before he took them down to the incinerator. He found her driver's license.
Olivia capped the marker.
She's still in an induced coma, so you can't interview her. Anyway, I thought this was being handled by the APD.
Amanda asked, Who caught the case?
I can look it up here.
Olivia referenced the tablet computer. Her face broke into a smile.
Oh, it was Denny. Denny Collier.
Chapter 12 Subarachnoid hemorrhage, Gary Quintana said.
That sounds like spiders.
It's a spidery area, Sarah told him. But basically it means she had bleeding in that part of the brain.
Oh, wow. Weird.
Gary continued reading Josephine Figueroa's preliminary autopsy report. Whatever Amanda had said to the young man yesterday morning had clearly left a mark. His shirt sleeves were rolled down. He wore a knit tie in place of his heavy gold necklace. Even his ponytail had been neutered. Instead of jutting proudly from the back of his head, the hair had been gathered into a neat bun. She was sad to see the ponytail go.
Okay, Gary read aloud from the conclusion. Cause of death is an epidural hemorrhage. What's that?
It's another type of intracranial bleed. Sarah could tell he wanted to know more.
She experienced an external trauma to her head. The skull fractured, tearing her internal maxillary artery, which branches off the external carotid and helps supply blood to the brain.
Blood filled the space between the dura mater and the skull. The skull holds a fixed volume, meaning it can't expand. All of that extra blood put too much pressure on her brain.
What happens when that happens?
In general, the patient loses consciousness transiently. At the time of injury, they're typically knocked out for a few minutes. Then they wake up and exhibit a normal level of consciousness. That's why these bleeds are so dangerous. There's a severe headache, but they're lucid until the bleed progresses enough to shut down the brain. Left untreated, they slip into a coma and die.
Wow.
He looked at the gurney that held Figueroa's body. They were standing in the hallway outside the APD morgue, which was located in the sub-basement of Grady Hospital. The gurney was pushed up against the wall, awaiting transport. Thanks to a batch of bad meth, the medical examiner had a full house. Gary said,
She sure went through some hell.
She did. He returned to the report.
What about fracture of the cervical vertebrae? That's the neck, right? That sounds really bad, too.
It is. She would have likely been paralyzed.
Her heart was bruised, too.
He frowned, disturbed by the findings.
Somebody whooped the hell out of her.
Not necessarily, Sarah explained. The skull fractures are evenly distributed. The ribs and cervical vertebrae are fractured, as you said, but the thoracic vertebrae and long bones aren't. She's not really bruised except on one side. Did you notice that?
Yeah. What's that mean?
That it's very likely that she either fell or was pushed from a great height. The cervical fractures are a tip-off. You don't get those from being beaten. She fell from at least 20 feet up. She hit the ground on her side, her skull fractured, the artery tore, and then a few hours later she died from the brain hemorrhage.
That balcony inside the club was about 30 feet up.
Gary looked at Sarah with a sense of awe.
Wow, Dr. Linton. That's pretty cool how you scienced that out.
He handed her the report.
Thank you for sharing all this with me. I really want to learn.
I'm glad Amanda assigned you to my division.
Yeah, she got me to slick up my look.
He patted his tie.
I gotta represent, you know. The focus should be on the victims, not on me.
Sarah supposed this was reasonable advice. I should track them down to let them know about the findings. Do you have any more questions?
Yeah, she's just, like, out here in the hallway. You think it's okay if I put her back in the freezer?
I think that would be very nice. Sarah patted him on the shoulder as she walked toward the stairs. The ICU was 6 floors up, but the elevators at Grady worked on their own time, and she needed to find Amanda sooner rather than later. Of course, finding Amanda meant she would also find Will. Sarah was shaken by an unwelcome reticence. She still wasn't sure how she felt about last night. Will hadn't wanted to talk in the car, but then he wouldn't shut up once they got home. He hadn't slept. He had been almost manic, spouting theories that were the equivalent of a snake eating its own tail. He was furious with Angie. He was deeply hurt, whether he would admit it or not. Everything that came out of his mouth was either talking around Angie or talking about her. Sarah looked at him as a doctor and wanted to medicate him, and this time make sure he didn't palm the pill. She looked at him as his girlfriend and wanted to wrap her arms around him and make everything better. Then she looked at him as a woman who'd been married, who knew how to be in a healthy relationship, and wondered what the hell she had signed up for. Sarah pulled open the door to the ICU just as a man was yelling, "So fucking what?" Holden Collier threw his hands into the air. His boyish affability was gone. It was no wonder why. Amanda, Faith, and Will were crowding in on him. Two of the Grady security guards were standing close by, their hands resting on their guns. Collier demanded, "Why would I report a domestic when we're looking for an unexplained stabbing?" He threw up his hands again. "It's explained. The boyfriend did it. She won't name him. What am I going to do?"
"Tell me again." Amanda's tone was hard as steel. "From the beginning."
"Unbelievable." Collier threw up his hands a third time. Sarah had no idea what he was being accused of, but his innocent act was filled with textbook overreaction. He said, "I was already at the ER with a perp. I took the domestic. She was bleeding out, but I got her story. Boyfriend came after her with a knife. She won't tell me his name, where she lives, whatever. Same bullshit as usual. She went into surgery. I wrote the report. I told them to call me if her status changed. That's my job." He wasn't finished. "You're so fucking hell-bent on jamming me up, you don't even see what this case is really about."
"Tell me what it's about."
"Rippy's Club is a shooting gallery. Gang tags are everywhere. Harding has a shit bucket in his closet. He was running drug mules up from Mexico, and it got him killed. End of story."
Amanda asked, "What about your relationship with Angie Pulaski?"
Sarah bit her lip.
Angie. She would give her entire life savings to never, ever have to hear the woman's name again. Amanda said, Sunday night into Monday morning, you had 3 calls back and forth with a burner phone. One of them lasted 12 minutes.
I was talking to an informant. He uses a burner. They all use burners.
Who's the informant? I want his name.
I'm not doing this here. Collier had finally realized he couldn't bluster his way out of the problem.
If you want to question me, I've got a right to have my union rep in the room.
Give him a call, Denny. This is happening.
Can I go?
We'll be in touch.
He stomped off, barely acknowledging Sarah as he bumped open the door to the stairs. Faith had her hands on her hips. She was furious. Amanda was furious. Will looked the same as he had for the last 24 hours, like a deer caught in the headlights.
Amanda said, Dr. Linton, what do you have?
Nothing you're going to like. Sarah felt sorry to again be the bearer of bad news.
According to the preliminary autopsy report, Josephine Figueroa died of a brain bleed. The stab wounds in her chest were very shallow, post-mortem, so there wasn't any bleeding. The cut on her cheek was post-mortem, so no bleeding. Her fingertips didn't crack from the heat. Someone sliced them with a razor, probably to hide her identity. Which doesn't make sense, but that's your department. Speaking from my department, I can tell you the finger cuts were post-mortem, too, because there was no bleeding.
Amanda clarified. You're saying that the blood at the crime scene did not come from the woman who was autopsied downstairs.
Exactly. All of her bleeding was internal. My guess is that she fell, probably from the balcony. Charlie said there was some blood on the ground floor. I'm assuming it came from her nose. She was alive for several hours, probably paralyzed, before the bleed killed her.
Amanda didn't seem surprised, which was not unusual because she had a good poker face. What was puzzling was that neither Faith nor Will seemed surprised either. Amanda asked,
Could it be possible that there was a second victim at the crime scene?
Absolutely. The club was heavily trafficked over the last few months. Someone with even a rudimentary knowledge of crime scene investigation could temporarily pull the wool over our eyes, at least until the labs, fingerprints, and analysis came back, which could take weeks, maybe months.
Did you see any signs of a child?
A child? Sarah was confused. You mean a toddler? Infant?
6 years old, Faith said.
We have a missing kid. We think Angie took him.
Sarah's hand went to her chest. She looked at Will, expecting him to be staring at the floor, but instead, he looked back at her. There was a hardness to his expression that she had never seen before. His manicness was gone. Anger had enveloped him, body and soul. He said,
We think Angie had a blackmail plan going with Joe. Joe ended up dead, so Angie thought she could leverage the grandson.
But she told you that Joe was dead. You had no idea that Joe even existed, let alone that she was Angie's daughter. Why would she tell you anything?
Something went wrong with the plan.
Will had to be guessing, but he sounded certain that Angie had yet again risked someone else's life for her own reward.
Amanda said, Come with me.
She took Sarah into a room with a cop standing outside. The lights were low. Sarah scanned the equipment by the bed. Cardiac monitor, central line catheter, NG tube, test tube. The patient's right arm was elevated, propped on pillows. Not too low so that the blood rushed into her fingers. Not too high so that there wasn't enough circulation. Surgical gauze and drains ballooned around the hand. O2 sat measures were on the tips of her fingers. Sarah said,
Her hand was reattached.
Yes.
Sarah studied the woman's face. Brown hair, olive skin. The eyes were swollen, but they still had the distinctive shape.
Amanda said, She was admitted as a Jane Doe, but they found her ID this morning. Delilah Palmer.
That name sounded familiar. Instead of asking Amanda more questions, Sarah went back to the nurse's station and asked to borrow a tablet computer. She still had her admitting privileges at Grady. The nurse, Olivia, knew her from before.
Olivia said, The waiting room should be empty. Sarah got the hint. Four people blocking the ICU hallway was never a good idea. They all walked down to the empty waiting room. Will stayed at Sarah's side. His shoulder touched hers. He was trying to make sure the connection was still there. She couldn't find it in herself to let him know this was true. Sarah sat down on one of the chairs. She logged into the system and scanned the woman's CT, x-rays, MRI, and surgical notes. Finally, something made sense. Faith asked, "Well?" Sarah relayed the information from the chart. She was stabbed 16 times, mostly in the torso, twice in the head. The tip of the knife broke off in her collarbone, minimizing the reach of the blade, which is probably why it just missed the heart and liver. The bowel was punctured. Her left lung collapsed. What remained of the knife was left embedded in her sternum. The first slash must have been to her arm. Sarah held up her own arm, the same as she had done yesterday morning. The attacker came straight at her. She took a defensive posture. The knife sliced her wrist, nearly severing the joint. She would have been flailing her arms, trying to stop the attack, which would spray blood everywhere like a hose. Fortunately for the victim, the blade severed the radial and ulnar arteries. I say fortunately because the arteries contract when they're sliced in two. That's why suicides tend to fail. You sever the artery, it rolls up into the arm and stops the blood. Almost like when you pinch the end of a garden hose to stop the pressure. Will asked, "That's where all the blood came from, right?"
That volume of blood could definitely come from this type of injury.
Sarah studied the x-rays again. This isn't the first time she's been attacked. She's got several older, healed fractures to the face and head. Two breaks in her arm, probably separated by a few years. These are classic signs of abuse. Amanda asked,
"Does the chart give Palmer's blood type?"
"They typed her when she came into the ER. It's B negative. Type is inherited. You would need either a B mother or B father to have it."
"Like Angie," Faith said. Amanda asked, "Can you pull up Delilah Palmer's past admits?"
Sarah went back to the home screen. She found Delilah Palmer's medical history, which hadn't been ported into the ICU chart yet. Palmer was born here 22 years ago, ward of the state. Overdoses, PID 5 times, bronchitis, skin infections, needle abscesses, heroin addict. She had a baby 2 years ago. Hold on. Sarah went back to the belly scans from 2 nights ago. Okay. According to the most recent chart, the one that was started Sunday night, the Palmer lying in the bed at the end of the hall has a scar for a C-section. She flicked back through the screens. But the older chart says that Palmer had a natural childbirth 2 years ago, which would fall in line with an episiotomy scar, which is what the body downstairs, the one Angie left at the funeral home, has. She looked up. The body downstairs showed signs of long-term IV drug use, but there's no indication of drug use in the woman at the end of the hall who is supposed to be Delilah Palmer. Sarah felt slow on the uptake. The body downstairs is Delilah Palmer. Joe Figueroa is here in the ICU. Angie switched their identities.
That's what we think. Faith showed her two photographs on her iPhone. The one on the right is Joe Figueroa. The one on the left is Delilah Palmer.
Sarah studied the two women. There was an eerie similarity.
Are they related?
Who knows? Faith asked. They both had the shit kicked out of them. Figueroa's own husband couldn't tell them apart. Sarah didn't point out that Will hadn't been able to either. Faith said, "We have a witness who puts Angie sticking Palmer in her trunk. I've gotta assume that Angie mutilated the body so we couldn't get a positive ID off the fingerprints." Sarah asked, "Why would Angie want us to think that Joe Figueroa was dead?"
Will said, "She's working a scam. That's the only explanation. Our Jane Doe put together the night of the attack for us. Harding's dying. Josephine is bleeding to death. Angie rushes Josephine to the hospital. Then, instead of leaving town or lying low, Angie drives back to the club to remove Delilah and stage the scene. That's a lot of work for somebody who doesn't like to do a lot of work. I guarantee you, There's some kind of payday at the end of this.
Sarah felt overwhelmed with disgust. She dropped the tablet on the chair beside her. She was sick of Angie's games, and she was the only one in the group who actually had the luxury of walking away.
Will seemed to sense that she was at the end of a rope.
I'm sorry.
Sarah didn't want to blame him. If ever there was a victim of Angie's machinations, it was Will.
Do you have any idea where she is? Where she might be keeping a child?
He shook his head, and she saw the idiocy of her question. If they knew where Angie was, they would be breaking down her door.
Faith said, We can only hope that because he's her grandson, she'll...
Motherfucker.
Faith's voice trailed off.
She's here.
They all turned in unison. Angie had just stepped off the elevator. She looked up. Her mouth formed an O, a perfect reflection of their shock. She tried to get back onto the elevator, but the doors closed. She scrambled toward the stairs. She wasn't fast enough. Will had bolted the moment he'd seen her. In seconds, he'd closed the gap between them. His arms shot out. His fingers snagged the back of her collar. Angie was wrenched back by the neck. Her feet flew out from under her. She hit the floor. He picked her up and threw her into the waiting room. Chairs clattered, crashing into each other, tipping over. He snatched her up again. His fist went back. The only thing that kept Will from shattering her into pieces was the two security guards jumping on his back like they were taking down a charging bull.
Will! Faith yelled, leaping into the fray.
She pushed him against the wall.
Stop it!
She was panting, out of breath. She said, Stop it. Quieter, still making it clear she wasn't going to let him do what he obviously wanted to do.
Calm down, okay? She's not worth it.
Will shook his head. Sarah knew what he was thinking. Killing her was worth it. Hurting her was worth it. Sarah said, Will. He looked at her, his eyes on fire.
Don't, she said, though she wanted him to.
The fire abated. The sound of her voice seemed to relax some of the tension from his body. He held up his hands in surrender, telling Faith,
I'm okay.
Faith stepped back, but she made sure that she stayed between him and Angie in case he changed his mind.
Shit, baby.
Angie was slumped onto the floor, chuckling like this had all been great fun. She wiped blood from her mouth and nose. There was more blood on her shirt, but it hadn't come from her face.
Last time you came at me like that, we were both naked.
Amanda said,
Arrest her.
For what? Angie asked. Getting beat up by a cop in front of a bunch of witnesses? Angie lifted the tail of her shirt to survey the damage. Her side had been stitched up, crudely, to close a wound. Will had broken open the sutures.
Anybody know a doctor?
Sarah said, I'm not touching her. Angie laughed again. She shook her head.
Jesus.
Will said, Where's Anthony? Who's watching him? Angie pressed her hands to the floor, pushing herself up to standing. Her purse fell down her shoulder, another cheap knockoff bag.
Who's Anthony?
Will ripped Angie's purse from her arm. Hey! He held her back with one hand. He threw the purse at Faith. Angie reached up for his hand, but Will pulled away, as if she'd burned him with acid. He was clearly trying to keep his temper under control. The God's honest truth was that Sarah still didn't want him to.
iPhone, iPad.
Faith laid out the contents of Angie's purse across two chairs. Flip phone. Five-shot revolver fired once. Prescription. She tossed the bottle to Sarah. Tissue, chapstick, change, business cards. Purse crap. Sarah looked at the bottle. The script was from a vet clinic off Cascade Road, prescribed to a pet named Mooch McGee. Keflex. Which was fine if you were a dog and couldn't get MRSA. Sarah put the bottle back on the chair. Angie could figure that out on her own.
Unlock it.
Faith held out the iPhone to Angie. Now.
Go fuck yourself. Will took the phone. He unlocked it in 2 tries. He handed it back to Faith, who immediately went to the call log. She said,
"Collier's number is on here. 2 last week. 3 calls early Monday morning that matched the times on his phone."
That explained Collier. Yet another man whose life Angie had ruined. Faith said, "She's got a lot of calls back and forth from a 770 number." Faith hit the callback button. She let it ring for a full minute before hanging up. No answer, no voicemail. Again, she scanned the log. "This is all with the 770 number, incoming at 1:40 a.m. Monday morning, outgoing 32 seconds later, then outgoing half an hour later, incoming at 4 a.m., then another incoming again at 1:15 yesterday afternoon, then 17 outgoing calls over the rest of yesterday and into today." Will asked Angie, "Who are you trying to get in touch with?" "My mother." Amanda had her own phone out. "I'll do a reverse trace." Faith went to the texts. This was between the flip phone and Angie's phone, 12:20 Sunday night. She writes, "What do you want?" The flip phone writes back, "iPad." Then a few seconds later, "Nightclub, now." She scrolled up and waited for a photo to download. Faith's mouth dropped open. She showed them the phone, stunned. At 12:16 Sunday night, Angie had been sent a picture showing Josephine Figueroa with her back pressed against a car window. A man's hand gripped her neck. She looked like she was screaming. Beneath it was the word, "daughter." Faith scrolled up again. There was another photo, this one sent at 12:15 Sunday night. It showed a young boy with the blade of a large hunting knife pressed into his throat. The word below read, "grandson." Sarah put her hand to her own heart. The boy's terror cut through her like she was holding him in her own arms. "Where is he?" Angie raised an eyebrow as if this was yet another mystery. "Where?" Sarah made herself stop talking. Angie fed off pain. Faith checked the flip phone, going through the sent messages. "The first photo I showed you, the one of Joe Figueroa, was taken with this flip phone. The second photo of Anthony was forwarded to the flip phone by the same 770 number that Angie has been trying to call." "The 770 number is from a burner." Amanda had obviously heard back on the reverse trace. "We're working with the phone company to find out which tower it's pinging from." Will asked, "Who sent that picture of Anthony? Was it Delilah Palmer? Was it Harding?" Angie ignored him. Faith picked up the iPad. She pressed the home button. "Don't," Angie said, for the first time registering concern. "You can't turn it on." "Why not? This is why your grandson was taken, right, for whatever is on this iPad?" Angie pressed her lips together. She watched Faith's finger on the button. Will said, "Turn it on." "No." Angie reached out to stop her, but Will pushed her away. She said, "If you turn the power on, the files will be erased." "What files?" Angie said nothing. Will said, "She's lying. Turn it on." "Go ahead," Angie dared. "The files will be gone and we'll never see Anthony again." Faith asked, "Should we risk it?" Amanda sighed. "It's an hour in traffic to get it to the computer lab. We don't know where the boy is. We don't know if she's telling the truth. The files might already be wiped clean, or we turn it on and we wipe it clean." Will said, "Schrodinger's cat." Angie clearly didn't get the reference, which gave Sarah a sense of victory because she did. "All you need is a Faraday cage," Sarah said. "It's a grounded metal screen that blocks electrical fields. That's why your phone won't work in an elevator. Go down to the sub-basement, stay inside the elevator, and you can turn on the iPad without any signal interference." Angie snorted. She asked Will, "This is what gets you going?" "Yeah," he told her. "It is." Angie rolled her eyes. She still had her hand pressed to her stomach. Blood was seeping between her fingers. "What are you looking at?"
Sarah couldn't answer. She was gripped with the same low-level fury that had followed her around since Charlie had told them that the Glock was registered to Angie. Every good moment Sarah had with Will was always going to have Angie's shadow lurking over it.
"Aw," Angie pouted her lip. "Little Sarah's upset.
Are we going to have another Bambi incident?"
Sarah slapped the shit out of her. Angie raised her hand to retaliate, but Faith caught her wrist, twisted her arm behind her back, and forced her into the wall.
"Don't forget how many people were happy to hear that you were dead."
"Don't forget how many weren't."
Angie wrenched her arm away. She rubbed her wrist.
"Give me my shit back. I'm leaving."
Will said, "You're not going anywhere. Who has Anthony? I know you don't have him."
She shook her head, laughing like he was too stupid to understand.
"You've never called anybody 17 times in your life. You fucked this up, right? You lost Anthony and now you're trying to get him back? That's why you told me it was Joe in the funeral home instead of Delilah. You wanted me to go to Reuben Figueroa's so that he was forced to put out an Amber Alert."
He was standing close to her, crowding her space the way he would any suspect.
"Your plan went sideways and you needed me to figure out that his son was gone."
He stepped closer.
"We're here now. We know Anthony is gone. We know Reuben's being blackmailed to get him back. Tell me what you know. Let me help make this right."
"What the fuck do you care, Will?"
She slammed her palms against his chest, pushing him away.
"I can handle this, all right? I can take care of myself and my family the same as I've been doing all my fucking life with no fucking help from you."
Will's jaw jutted out like a shard of glass.
"Your grandson's life is at stake.
You're the one stopping me from doing what I've got to do."
"Angie, please. Let me help you. I want to help you."
He sounded desperate.
"If that's my grandson out there, then I deserve a chance to know him."
"Nice try." She pulled away. "Joe isn't yours. Not unless you got my hand pregnant." She gave Sarah a pointed look. "Which, if that was possible, your girlfriend would have a load of fetuses pouring out of her mouth." Sarah tensed every muscle in her body so that she wouldn't lash out again. Angie asked her,
"Did you read the note I left for Will?"
"Yes." Angie was clearly thrown that there wasn't more.
"Please," Will said. "Angie, there's a little boy out there. Your family, maybe your only family. Tell us how to help him."
"Since when do you care about helping family?"
She gave a derisive snort.
"I'm your family. I'm fucking bleeding and you don't even care."
Will took out his handkerchief. He pressed it to Angie's side. Sarah felt her heart start to wither at the sight of him touching her so gently.
"I'm sorry," he told Angie. "I didn't mean for it to get like this. You're right. It's my fault."
Angie glanced at Sarah. Real or not, she wanted to make sure that Will's obsequiousness had an audience. Will said,
"I know I hurt you. I'm sorry. Please, Angie, I'm sorry."
Angie looked away from Sarah, but only so she could soak up Will's misery.
"Please," Will repeated. Sarah wanted to snatch the word out of his mouth. She hated the sound of his begging. "Please."
Angie let out a short breath.
"Do you know how bad things have been for me?"
Angie covered Will's hand with hers. Sarah couldn't tell if she was breaking down or just playing Will like she always did.
"Do you know the things I've had to do? Not just this week, but before. I'm sorry I wasn't there."
Harding was him, Will. When Deidre checked out, Harding was the guy on the other side of the door.
Will took the words like a blow. This wasn't an act.
"You told me he was dead."
"He is now."
Shock had almost rendered Will speechless.
"Angie,"
what he did to me. Angie's voice was low, troubled. She could see the effect her words were having on Will. He did it to Delilah. He did it to a lot of girls. For years. I couldn't stop him. Why didn't you tell me?
His hand reached out. He stroked back her hair.
I could have done something. Protected you. I fucked up so bad, baby.
Angie inhaled sharply. She was crying.
I know I fucked with you, but it was only to protect Joe. I had to buy her some time in the hospital, some time to heal, while I worked on getting Anthony back.
I get it now, he said.
I understand. I don't know how it all went so bad.
She swallowed hard.
Dale was always smarter than me, always stronger. He got inside my head again, him and Mama like they always did. I never saw it coming.
We can still get Anthony back, Will said. Let me help you.
I just needed 6 more days. Then I could get Anthony, take care of Joe, make sure she got her happy ever after.
Angie sniffed.
Somebody deserves a happy ever after, don't they? Somebody needs...
Her voice broke.
I can't lose him, baby. I already abandoned her once. I can't lose her, kid.
We're not going to lose him. His hands went to her shoulders. He looked her in the eyes. When you said your mother sent you the photo of Anthony, you meant Virginia Souza, right?
Angie stiffened.
Right?
He repeated.
Angie jerked away.
You fucking asshole.
Will's face registered a deep satisfaction. For once, he'd managed to be the one doing the manipulating. He told Amanda, Dale Harding was Angie's pimp. Virginia Souza was his bottom girl. He wiped his hands on his shirt like they were dirty. Virginia has Anthony. She's the one who took the picture. She's the one who has him.
Angie glared at him. I fucking hate you.
He stared at her with a look of utter contempt.
Good.
Amanda asked Angie, where is Virginia Souza?
Go fuck yourself, you dried up old bitch.
All right, you've outspent your welcome,
Amanda told Faith.
Take her down to the prison ward, get her some medical attention.
No! Angie panicked. Leave me up here. Handcuff me to Joe's bed if you have to.
Amanda tried again. Where is Virginia Souza?
She's not going to hurt him. The father's the highest bidder. She had her arms crossed low on her belly. She was pressing into the wound, making the blood run. She tried again with Will.
There's a video on that iPad. Something that's worth a lot of money.
Virginia knew I had it. She said she'd trade Anthony for the iPad. I was supposed to meet her yesterday morning, but she double-crossed me.
He was still unmoved.
Virginia called Reuben Figueroa directly. That's why you wanted me to intervene. I get Anthony back for you, and then what? You sell whatever's on the iPad?
I don't give a shit about the money. You know that, baby.
Amanda asked a third time.
Where is Virginia Souza?
You don't think I've been looking for her?
Angie demanded.
She's lying low. Not in her usual places. Nobody will tell me where she is. They're scared of her. They should be.
Angie wiped her eyes again. She always saved her tears for herself.
You can't trust her. She's a cold bitch. She doesn't care who gets hurt, especially kids.
Sarah chewed at the irony. There's something else, Faith asked Angie. Why did you come here?
To say goodbye to Joe, in case.
Angie looked out into the hall. I kept waiting for the Amber Alert, but it didn't come. Faith said, Reuben won't report him missing. He's trying to handle it on his own.
I figured. Angie took one of the tissues from her purse. I was going to go to his house and shoot him in the head.
The casual way she detailed her plan to murder a man sent a shiver of cold through Sarah's veins.
Angie blew her nose, wincing at the pain in her side. Without Reuben, the iPad matters again. I could do what I was going to do in the first place, trade the iPad for Anthony.
With Kip Kilpatrick, Faith guessed.
Angie was still trying to get Will's attention. He was deliberately looking away from her. She said,
I know I fucked this up, baby. I was just trying to help my daughter. She doesn't even know who I am.
Will's face was stone. Angie had no idea what she had done to him. Sarah's only hope was that this newfound clarity would last longer than the crisis at hand. Amanda's phone rang. She listened for a beat, then told them,
Reuben Figueroa left his house. Laszlo Zivkovic is in the car with him. They're going west on Peachtree. Just crossed over Piedmont. We've got 3 cars on chase. The other stayed at the residence.
Faith said, He's going away from downtown, toward the malls, public place, lots of people. That's where I'd do an exchange.
Amanda looked at her watch. The mall just opened. There won't be much of a crowd yet.
Angie said, He's doing reconnaissance. That's why he brought Laszlo. Reuben is a control freak. He thinks his wife has been murdered. Somebody stole his son and is demanding money. This is why I wanted to go through Kip. I told Virginia that Reuben would shoot her in the head if he ever got the chance.
Amanda said, I don't know how fast I can get SWAT there. The Buckhead precinct can do deep backup. We've got 3 agents and 3 cars. We're at the end of rush hour. It'll take an hour for us to get up to Buckhead. We can go lights and sirens part of the way, but...
Sarah said, There's a helicopter on the roof. She had flown in the air ambulance for emergency transports. The Shepherd Spinal Center has a heliport. That'll cut your travel time to 15 minutes.
Perfect, Amanda said. Faith, handcuff Angie to the bed. Get someone from APD to sit on her. Make sure they're not connected to Collier. Will goes with me in the chopper. He's the better shot, and Reuben hasn't seen his face.
She tossed her keys to Will.
My rifle is in the back of the car. The magazines are in the lockbox. Get my speed loader and a pack of ammo.
Instinctively, Sarah grabbed Will's arm. This was happening too fast. Amanda was talking about shooting people. People shooting back. Sarah didn't want him to leave. She didn't want to lose him.
Will cupped his hand to Sarah's face. I'll see you back home when this is over.
Chapter 13. Will studied the map on the wall inside the security offices at Phipps Plaza. There were 1,000 ways the handoff between Reuben Figueroa and Virginia Souza could spin out of control. Deshaun Watkins, the chief of security, outlined a few of them for Amanda.
There are 4 possible points of approach directly into Level 3.
Deshaun pointed out 3 different escalators and the elevator that serviced all 3 levels inside the main atrium.
Then there's another set of escalators if you go through the Belk department store, 1 up, 1 down. Then there's this elevator here inside Belk, and another elevator here at the street entrance. None of the main elevators go to the parking garage, except this one here and here.
Amanda said,
So we're effectively inside a sieve.
She looked at her watch. They were assuming that the meet would take place on the hour or half hour. She told Will,
It's 11:16. If we get past noon, we're going to have to rethink this. There's no telling how many people will turn up here for lunch.
Deshaun said,
You're talking most of the people who work in the stores, a lot more kids. The place is filled by 12:30.
Will rubbed his jaw as he studied the map on the wall. The layout was familiar. He'd been to Phipps with Sarah more times than he would have liked. The mall was 3 levels, stacked like a wedding cake with the smaller top tier pushed to the front. There was a round, open atrium that ran through all 3 floors. The railings were glass with polished wood and gold handrails. The elevator had a glass back. Will couldn't help but be reminded of Marcus Rippey's nightclub, though the ambiance was the exact opposite. The floors were sparkling clean. Skylights brought in ample sunshine. Reuben Figueroa sat in the food court area on the 3rd level, the same as he'd been the entire time. He had picked a good location to trade off his son. Or maybe Virginia Souza had chosen the spot.
Even on a Tuesday, the top level was a mecca for preschool children. The Legoland Discovery Center hosted toddler time every Tuesday morning. The movie theater was running a cartoon marathon. Kids weren't the only problem.
There was a large, open food court with several fast food restaurants. Scattered through the rest of the mall were elderly mall walkers and shoppers perusing the over 100 stores. If Will was going to trade off a kid for money, this is where he'd do it. Then again, they didn't know whether or not Ruben Figueroa meant to make a trade. A public place, a controlling man who owned a lot of guns, a terrified little boy, a woman who had built her life around hurting kids. This could go like clockwork, or it could go like hell. Will mentally walked through the best-case scenario. Souza walks into the mall with Anthony. The good guys scoop up the kid and return him to his father. Second best, Souza manages to give them the slip as she makes her way to the food court. She trades Anthony for the money. The good guys isolate her on the second level, then make an arrest. Will didn't want to think about the worst-case scenario, the one where Reuben, who didn't mind hitting women, demanded payback, the one where Virginia Souza had a gun or a knife and a kid in her hands, the one where they went to a second location that there was no way to control. Then there was Laszlo. Then there was the possibility that Souza had an accomplice. As the mama in charge, she had her pick of young girls who would do her bidding. Any one of them, any two or three of them, could be posing as one of the young mothers in the food court. Souza's girls were street savvy. They would know what a cop looked like. They could warn Souza. They would have her back if the trade went south. They were all as feral as Angie, hardened and mean and desperate to do whatever it took to protect their family. Amanda said, "She won't take the elevators. That's not a quick getaway." "It wouldn't make sense to go down to the parking garage." Deshaun pointed to the map again, the glass elevator in the atrium. "She'd have to go down two levels, then this is the closest exit. But we can keep the elevators from going down to the garage if you want." "Do that," Will told Amanda. "Reuben has the knee brace. He won't be able to move fast." "Let's hope it's not Reuben we're following out of this mall." Amanda asked Deshaun, "How would you get out of here? Down the escalators to the second level, then what?" "Level one is the only way out." Deshaun was still at the map. "If we take out the parking garage, there are 12 street entrances, 3 each at Belk, Saks, and Nordstrom. Then we've got 2 more entrances off Monarch Court and 1 more entrance off the Avenue of the South. Either one can take you to Peachtree or the interstate. I'd go this exit at the valet parking station." "Makes sense," Amanda said. "Reuben's car is parked in front of Saks. He takes a right. He's in the car, then onto the interstate." "Or home," Will said, but Amanda's look told him that she didn't think it was likely. Her radio clicked. She walked to the other side of the room, checking in with the team. 12 uniformed cops from the APD's Buckhead precinct were scattered around the mall. SWAT was on the roof and staked out across the buildings on the corner. Mall security was keeping to its regular rounds so as not to raise suspicion. 3 of the GBI agents from the chase cars outside Reuben's house were spread out near the escalators. The 4th was trailing Laszlo, who had been casing the mall for the last hour and a half. Angie was right about Reuben Figueroa. He had come early to give himself a tactical advantage, which was good because it had given Amanda time to set up her people, too. Will's biggest concern was, had Virginia Souza done the same? All they had to identify the woman by was her last booking photo, which had been taken 4 years ago. Her long, stringy brown hair and smeared makeup made her look like Central Casting's idea of an old whore. If Souza was as smart as Angie said, she'd know that she couldn't walk into Phipps Plaza looking like herself. The mall was too high-end for her to go unnoticed. Deshaun said, "We can call in maintenance. Maybe put up a barrier on that escalator, make it look like it's broken down." Will said, "I'm worried that might tip him off." "He doesn't look jumpy." "No," Will said, but that wasn't necessarily a good thing. A composed man was a man who had made up his mind. They could detain Reuben,
You didn't need cause to do that, but then Sousa might have a spotter who'd warned her off. And the next time they saw Anthony, he would be in a gutter or on the internet. Will looked at the bank of high-definition monitors on the wall. The displays were in full color. There was no need to toggle through the different security cameras. There were 16 screens. The largest monitor, the one in the center of the wall, showed Ruben Figueroa. He was sitting at the back of the food court, one level up from where Will stood. The open atrium was at his shoulder. There was no way he could escape over the side. Even a basketball star couldn't survive a three-story fall. Fortunately, the tables immediately around him were vacant. The other shoppers were keeping a wide berth. The mother seemed especially suspicious of a man sitting alone in the place where they had brought their children. Reuben had come incognito, a falcon's hat tight on his bald head. A laptop was on the table in front of him. He was slumped in the chair in an attempt to conceal his height. His mustache and goatee had grown into a full beard because he was one of those guys who needed to shave every 4 hours. He was wearing a black T-shirt and black jeans. Not exactly combat gear, but close enough. A large duffel bag was at his feet. Because of the T-shirt, they knew he wasn't wearing a gun. But the duffel bag was easily large enough to accommodate a rifle or an automatic machine gun, or a handgun, or all three. Amanda was off the radio. She told Will, "Laszlo just left the mall. He moved the car to the Ritz-Carlton. He's parked in the valet lane. This is about to happen." Deshaun said, "He'll leave out of the Nordstrom side to get to the Ritz." "I'll let SWAT know." Amanda gave Will the radio, then headed toward the door. "Faith is on her way up. I'll take my place. Will, be ready to move wherever you're needed. Belt and suspenders." Deshaun picked up a desk phone. He told Will, "I'll tell Nordstrom security we think they're going to see some action." Will watched the monitors. The security office was right outside a single escalator that led to the top floor. Amanda held onto the handrail as she climbed. Like Reuben, she was in disguise, dressed in a pastel blue tracksuit and white T-shirt that she had picked up at one of the stores. Her big purse was empty except for her revolver and three speedloaders. She was wearing glasses. A floppy, white old lady hat was on her head. Like everyone else on the team, she wore an earbud that worked as a two-way radio, picking up her speech through a vibration in her jaw. Instead of walking toward Reuben, she sat down at one of the tables outside Belk, about 60 feet away. She kept her back to him. Phil Brower, one of the agents from the chase cars, was already at the table with two cups of coffee. They blended in well, passing for an old retired couple with time on their hands. Amanda said, "We're in place." Deshaun asked Will, "You sure we don't just clean this place out?" "It'll tip her off." "That's a big risk." "We've got someone inside the Legoland, another at the theater. We'll lock down everything the moment there's any sign of trouble." "What about the pedestrians?" He pointed to the monitor showing the food court. "There's at least a dozen people there." Will had counted 9, including a table of 4 young mothers with babies and strollers. Amanda had placed herself between the women and Reuben Figueroa. "If we don't get this kid today, then the woman who has him will trick him out to the nearest pedophile." "Jesus." Deshaun let that sink in. "What's your plan if she tries to run off with the kid, takes him hostage or something?" Will tapped his rifle on his shoulder. "Jesus." Faith entered the room. She was wearing the black suit she kept in the trunk of her car instead of her usual GBI blue shirt and khakis. Her gun was on her hip. She nodded at Deshaun, asking Will, "What have we got?" "Amanda is here with Brower. She put herself between Reuben and this table." He pointed to the 4 young mothers. They were laughing. One of them was feeding her baby. Another was on her phone. Faith said, "They can take cover inside the Belk if they need to." Will said, "We've got one of our guys inside Legoland. Store security knows to bring down the gate if there's trouble. They've been keeping the kids to the back where there's a birthday party. The gift store is at the front, so there aren't a lot of potential problems there. Same with the movie theater. The cartoon lets out at noon, but we've got APD inside behind the concession stand and at the mall exit. ready to lock them in place. He showed her the map on the wall. We've got the escalators covered here, 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 and here. He pointed to the corresponding area. Laszlo is parked across the street from here. SWAT is outside.
They're good. I didn't see them.
We gave all the store managers Sousa's booking photo. They'd been told not to approach her. We didn't want to pass the photo to the clerks and start a lot of chatter.
She's not going to look like her booking photo.
It's all we have.
Faith stared at Ruben Figueroa.
I don't like that duffel bag. Even with $1 million in cash, it doesn't need to be that big.
Will followed her gaze to the monitors. Ruben was still sitting at the table, staring at his laptop.
We had one of our guys sitting near him, but Ruben got spooked, so we had to pull back.
He couldn't tell what was in the bag?
No, but Ruben's been looking at pictures of the wife and kid on the laptop, scrolling through them over and over again.
Who's that?
Will looked at the big monitor. A young woman was walking toward Ruben. She sat down 3 tables away. Her head was bent toward her phone. White earbuds disappeared into her hair. She was wearing what most of the other mothers were wearing, some variation on a gym outfit. Ruben stared at the woman for a long while before turning back to his laptop.
Faith said, "Her shoes are wrong."
Will looked at the red shoes. They were slip-ons.
"You mean because she's not wearing sneakers?"
A woman who can sit around a mall on a Tuesday morning in her workout clothes doesn't buy her shoes at Walmart.
She added, "Also, why is she here if she isn't with a kid?"
Will studied the other women on the periphery of the food court. Invariably, they had some form of child attached to them, whether they were holding a baby or dragging a toddler away from the Legoland.
Deshaun said, "It's 11:28.
"Green jacket."
Faith stepped closer to the monitors.
"That's a woman, right?"
An androgynous-looking woman was waiting outside the elevator on the first level. She was wearing dark sunglasses and a Braves baseball cap with a brim pulled low. Her jeans were dark blue. The dark green jacket was zipped almost to her neck. Her hands were tucked into the pockets.
Deshaun said, "She doesn't work here, at least not so that I've noticed."
"Is that Sousa?" Faith asked.
"She could have the kid somewhere else, maybe in a car downstairs."
A second location. The worst of the worst-case scenarios.
Will got on the radio.
"We need a quiet sweep of the garage. Check for Anthony in a parked car."
The woman pressed the elevator button again. Her hand went back into her jacket pocket. There was something furtive to her movements. She was clearly nervous. Will clicked on the radio again. He told Amanda,
"We might have someone in the elevator. Green jacket. Stand by."
10-4,
Amanda said.
"She doesn't look young, right?"
Faith practically had her nose touching the monitor.
"The way she carries herself. She's not talking on her phone or listening to music. It's too hot for that jacket."
Deshaun said, "We'll see her face when she gets on the elevator."
The door slid open. Green jacket didn't look up as she got on. She kept her head down, hands still tucked deep into her pockets. The door started to close, but her arm shot out, stopping it.
"Shit," Faith said.
Yet another woman was getting onto the elevator. Tall, blonde ponytail, dressed in a V-neck T-shirt and running shorts. She was trying to wrangle a 2-seater baby stroller onto the elevator. An infant was in the front seat. A little girl dressed like a character from the Lego movie slept in the back.
"I don't like this," Faith said. "That's 2 kids, 2 hostages."
As they watched, Green Jacket leaned down, gripping the front of the stroller and pulling it onto the elevator. There was an exchange of pleasantries before the doors closed. They silently rode up to the 3rd level.
"She's still not looking at the camera," Faith said.
"Nobody keeps their head down all of the time like that."
Will held the radio to his mouth.
"Green jacket getting off the elevator."
Phil Brower stood up from the table. He threw away his coffee cup in the trash can. Green jacket helped the blonde maneuver the stroller out of the elevator, then walked toward the movie theater. Brower sat down at another table. He put his phone to his ear. Will heard the man's voice on the radio.
"Can't tell with a hat. She's got dark hair. Looks about the right age." They all leaned closer to the screens. Green Jacket stood in front of the box office. She looked up at the board.